Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, thank you. You've tuned in to Smoke News Radio. I'm your host, Jason Brodsky. Let's start out first from clickondetroit.com. Cannabis and COVID, key differences between CBD, CBDA, CBGA. New study finds cannabis compounds block coronavirus proteins. From Grantham, England, the popularity of CBD oil from the cannabis family of plants has grown in recent years due to its health properties. The study published this week by researchers at Oregon State University found some hemp compounds have the ability to prevent the virus that causes CV-19 from entering human cells. Findings of the study, led by Richard Van Bremen, a researcher with Oregon State's Global Hemp Innovation Center, College of Pharmacy, and Linus Pauling Institute, were published this week in the Journal of Natural Products. Hemp, known scientifically as cannabis sativa, is a source of fiber, food, and animal feed, and multiple hemp extracts and compounds are added to cosmetics, body lotions, dietary supplements, and food, Van Bremen said. Quoted, we identified several cannabinoid ligands and ranked them by affinity to the spike protein. Van Bremen said the two cannabinoids with the highest affinities for the spike protein were CBDA and CBGA. They were confirmed to block infection. So what are the differences between CBD, CBDA, CBGA, and marijuana plants you'd buy at a dispensary? Okay, CBD, an abbreviation for cannabidiol, doesn't produce any psychoactive effects. It's likely what you see at some pharmacies, health stores, or dispensaries. It's a very versatile compound, which makes it ideal for oils, gummies, lotions, creams, and other products. Hemp contains a lot of CBD, but CBD is not the compound that was tested in the Oregon State study. CBD is activated in the hemp plants from its original form, CBDA, known as cannabidiolic acid, is secreted in the stems, leaves, and flowers of a cannabis plant. When the plant undergoes activation, a process with heat, the acid is removed from the CBDA, activating CBD. They have similar compounds, but CBDA is not as versatile. It's usually extracted by juicing plant material and can be added to foods, drinks, or used in tinctures. Concentrated herbal extracts, but basically CBDA is the raw form of CBD, and it's not as easy to find, but you can buy it. And it has not been tested as much as CBD. Next, the CBGA, known as cannabigerolic acid, is considered the mother cannabinoid because without it, there is no CBD, CBDA, or THC. CBGA compounds are similar to other cannabinoids, but it hasn't been studied nearly as much as the others. Its non-intoxicating enzymes called synthase are responsible for converting CBG into molecules such as THCA, the raw, unactivated molecule that converts to THC after heat is applied. Again, you can find this in oils and tinctures online, but it's harder to find it at times, pretty expensive, because it's harder to extract. So what about smoking marijuana? At this point, it doesn't appear that just smoking marijuana, even a heavy CBD strain, will produce the effects reported in this study. We don't have enough information to suggest it. CBDA or CBGA products, like oils, offering these in their raw form do not work the same in marijuana products, which usually include high levels of THC, the psychoactive comp that makes you high. And before trying something new, do your research, talk to your doctor, and make sure it's something you should bring into your life. Check out Project CBD for some information on getting started. All right. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from the Chicago.SunTimes.com. Choo-choo! Chicago stores exploit legal loophole to sell THCO, a psychedelic, three times stronger than weed. Military scientists once investigated the compound as a potential non-lethal incapacitating agent. Now, a hemp-derived version is touted for its powerful, mind-bending effects. The story of THCO sounds like something out of Seth Rogen's Pineapple Express. Military scientists once investigated the synthetic cannabis-like compound on a potential non-lethal incapacitating agent while conducting secret experiments on the effects of marijuana and its byproducts. Decades later, a hemp-derived version of the substance is touted as being three times more potent, even the strongest weed, providing a potentially psychedelic experience. But THCO, also known as THCO acetate, is no Hollywood creation. You can buy the alternative cannabinoid at stores all over Chicago that specialize in selling quasi-legal products that don't face the same stiff regulations as products sold at licensed weed shops. The emergence of THCO was made possible by Congress. Its passage of the Federal Farm Bill of 2018 made the distribution and sale of hemp and its derivatives legal. The law banned products containing more than a minuscule amount of Delta-9 THC, the main component in marijuana that gets users high, but it didn't account for the galaxy of psychoactive compounds that can be extracted or produced from hemp. Best known among these is Delta-8 THC, another hemp derivative known commonly as diet weed that has attracted long lines at some Chicago businesses. Some restaurants and coffee shops have even begun incorporating it into their menus, even as the Chicago City Council's efforts to establish rules for the public consumption of legal marijuana have stalled. But THCO is far more potent than Delta-8, which has been pitched as a lighter alternative to traditional cannabis products. That's gotten attention in Springfield, where a bill has been introduced to create testing standards for such cannabinoids in line with those imposed on the legal marijuana industry. State Senator Christina Castro, co-sponsor of the Bill of Elgin, quotes, "These trendy cannabinoids aren't a new issue and definitely need to be regulated in a way to keep people safe." For some people, it would be hard to tell the difference between legal cannabis and hemp byproducts that have grown increasingly popular. Stores in the Chicago area, some calling themselves dispensaries, are now selling THCO in pre-rolled joints, vape cartridges, edibles, and other forms. Some are even more user-friendly than regulated cannabis dispensaries and leave bins of hemp flower out in the open for customers to inspect, something strictly forbidden at licensed weed dispensaries. Since they're unregulated, the products don't come with the high taxes of legal weed, which can add up to more than 25% of the total bill. Sonia Villalobra, training and development manager for the CBD Kratom, which got 14 stores in Chicago and suburbs, said sales have been steady since the multi-state company began carrying THCO products about a month ago. Another chain, Smokes Post, announced in October that its 5 Chicago stores now carried THCO. Villabra goes on to quote, "A lot of our customers were very excited about it prior to us releasing it because they did see it becoming available in other places. It's definitely a game changer." Villalobra acknowledges that THCO has been compared to a mild psychedelic, but says users say it merely puts you in a different headspace. Because THCO has to be metabolized, it takes up to 30 minutes to kick in, even if inhaled. Charles Wu, whose company Prescribed D grows hemp at the Bridgeview greenhouse, says he has sampled THCO which his firm produces, and he notes can create a slightly euphoric experience that can be pretty intense. Smoke Post, which has 5 stores, including the one in the West Loop, is among Chicago businesses selling the high-potency THCO and dangerous to make, converting non-psychoactive hemp-based CBD into THCO is complicated and potentially dangerous, which means it's less widely available than other alternative cannabinoids made from hemp. Nilalabra says the products CBD Kratom sells are made using an extraction process that converts CBD into Delta 9, which is then turned into Delta 8, that's combined with a pair of corrosive chemicals, one of which is flammable and highly explosive. It's something not a lot of companies are doing, she says. The market, quoted, is not saturated with THCO because it's a very complex and dangerous thing that has to be done in a lab setting. Yet the products don't have to meet any health or safety standards. Last year, a licensed cannabis testing lab screened Delta 8 products and found high levels of residual solvents and heavy metals in one brand of vape cartridges. It also found that many Delta 8 products contained illegal levels of Delta 9. Pamela Altahoff, executive director of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois, says she's been lobbying for more oversight of such products for more than a year. John Cahia, chief knowledge officer for the New Frontier Data, a cannabis research company, says THCO was identified as early as the 1940s and researched by the United States military scientists with other cannabinoids and drugs like LSD and psilocybin, the psychedelic ingredient in magic mushrooms. A 1984 report from the United States National Academics Press, which publishes the Week of Government Researchers, found that THC acetate had twice the capacity to impair muscle function in dogs as natural THC from cannabinol or CBD. The testing was conducted at Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland, where the Army Chemical Corps conducted classified medical studies from 1955 to 75, according to U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Peggy says the compound has reemerged for the same reason. Broadcast issue. That was so cool. Like, sometimes you just don't got the furniture to put everything together. That's still going. Okay. Oh, I got to get down a little more here. Let's get this one back onto here. Okay, there we go. Sweet. Sometimes you just got to just roll with how the universe just plays things. It's like, all right. So, this one can go here. And this one is This is the one with the words. Oh, how about that? Okay, there you go. With the words. Okay, this is part of the not using cardboard as furniture for all your electronics kind of thing. So, let's see if devices are still going here. Okay, the main still recording, that's still recording. That thinks it's still going. That says I'm still online. Still guests calling. Guests are welcome to call in with news stories to read also to give me a break to smoke a joint or something. So here we go. It is I can't look at the screen at the same time. Here we go. Okay. A 1984 report from the U.S. National Academies Press, which publishes the work of government researchers, found that THC acetate, I got through that one, gained popularity because federal regulators never issued clear guidance about the infusing food products with CBD following the passage of the Farm Bill. Cahia says major consumer packaged good companies have hesitated to use the trendy substance. There we go. That left hemp farmers with unused crops and processors with unsold CBD. Their efforts to get some return on their investment led to a drop in prices that stimulated the market for Delta 8 and now THC 0. Oh, according to Cahia, he says the alternative cannabinoids also gained attraction because they exist in there you go. Quoted, this is a perfect example of where the innovation is moving much, much faster than the science, he quotes. There clearly needs to be more contemporary research done to help us understand what the psychological and physiological effects would be to consumers. If the market proves to be lucrative, Cahia says more companies will look to cash in on the potentially dangerous process of producing THCO. It's happened before, he says, pointing to reports in recent years of exploding basements in Colorado where butane hash oil was being produced. Quoted, this is a good illustration of the challenges that regulators are going to have to play whack-a-mole with these derivatives compounds that fall within the gray space of the federal and state law. THCO is not going to be the end of this story. Wu says his company hasn't had any problems making THCO or other hemp-based products like Delta 8. He says it mixes the substance in edible products to try to ensure the delayed effects of THCO don't overwhelm the consumers. His cultivation site already adheres to the state's rules for testing and packaging cannabis products. His company, which qualifies for social equity status, won a state license to transport recreational weed, but fell short of approval in the initial dispensary and cultivation licensing rounds. It now has another shot to win one of the 60 new cultivation permits that are being held up by a court order, Wu says. Althoff says devising legislation has been complicated by the licensing problems that have slowed efforts to diversify the white-dominated cannabis industry. She says legislators don't want to create another roadblock for companies like Wu's Prescribed D. End quote. The issue that we're trying to address is that many social equity individuals who tried to gain access to the cannabis industry that has now been continually delayed and delayed and delayed have somewhat veered into the hemp industry. Althoff says legislators are trying to find a middle ground that wouldn't negatively impact those new social equity entrepreneurs and yet ensure that there is a consumer safety requirement. Some states have banned Delta 8, but Illinois, legislation that would require products containing unchecked cannabinoids like THCO to be tested and labeled, stalled after passing the House last April. A Senate group is drafting language that would include all similar compounds, even those that haven't made it to market yet. Senator Castro quotes, "There have been lots of conversations already on ways to do this, and there will be plenty more to come as we work with stakeholders to find a legislative solution. Although regulating these is a priority, it's equally important that we take the time to get it right." Fantastic. You guys listen to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. And the electronics, I think, are still working after they all, like, went down to a foot and a half. Must enjoy. Okay, next, from Benzinga.com. Oh, what's up with that one? Okay, I'm not saying that, like, everything stays hot. And it's so new. But I'm working on it. Okay. From Benzinga.com. The first Eastern Caribbean state to export medical cannabis is ready for global business. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, a Caribbean nation with a population of just over 110,000 people, exported 110 pounds of cannabis to Germany, making it the first Eastern Caribbean state to export medical marijuana. St. Vincent's Agriculture Minister Sabato Caesar said on January 7th that Germany's Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices had approved a license for the shipment and that the product sold by Caribbean Cannabis Company should be in Germany post-haste. Caesar quotes, "St. Vincent and the Grenadines is ready for global business in the medicinal wellness industry space." Shake it. Go shake. Oh, there we go. Shake it. Hold still. Shake it. Hold still. Shake it. Oh, shake it. You know, sometimes you don't know what happened to the power strip. It's just underneath everything. And if everything's still plugged in properly. Like, you know, people have to worry about their wardrobe errors. And like, when it's whole crash of everything. It's like, oh, man, the Super Bowl. Hold on, dude. The laptop the Super Bowl is being broadcast on fell over. All right. So... sometimes a monitor wants to come back, and sometimes it doesn't. You know, like, I check the HDMI, it's good. I think there's still a power thing somewhere, and it's maybe plugged in. Okay, so, to the laptop. Dun, 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 to the laptop. Okay, here we go. Saboto Caesar said on January 7th that Germany's Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices had approved a license for the shipment. Caesar noted that while this was the first medical cannabis export by a member of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, which is made up of 11 nations, there will be more to come. All right. What's up? Okay. Next, from news.osu.edu, California marijuana growers can't take much to the bank. Legalization of marijuana in California has helped some financial institutions in the state increase their assets. At the same time, many banks, feeling stifled by federal regulations, deny services to licensed growers, manufacturers, and retailers, a new study shows. Combining data on bank holdings and interviews with growers and bankers, the research paints an initial picture on how the marijuana and financial industries coexist in California now and suggests regulatory changes could create new opportunities for both. The data analysis did make one thing clear. Legalization of the estimated $16 billion marijuana industry in California has been a boon to financial institutions, but restricted access to banking from checking accounts to loans perpetuates inequities for those participating in the legal production of cannabis, while unlicensed illegal growing and exporting continues as an enormous caste-based sector of the industry. Lead study author Zoe Plakias, assistant professor of agriculture at the Environmental and Development Economics at the Ohio State University, quotes, "We need better understanding of the economics of this industry and all of the questions and implications related to it, so the impacts of policy choices are intentional. If we want to have a more equitable society and allow communities to have more of the value of this crop, how do we do that? We first need to caricaturize what happens in communities when you legalize cannabis." Plakias and Margaret Jodlowski, assistant professor of agriculture, environment, development, economics, also Ohio State, conducted the survey with researchers Parisi Cavossi, Taylor Giamo, and Keith Taylor of University of California, Davis. Taylor quotes, licensed cannabis businesses need to bank their cash and take out loans to build their businesses. But many banks worry that by doing business with the cannabis industry, they'll be flouting federal laws. Banks that won't accept legal cannabis cash deposits and don't provide loans are monetizing their deposits. Marginalized cannabis communities are missing out on capital. The research is published online in the Journal Agricultural Finance Review. Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug under the Federal Controlled Substances Act, even in states that have legalized recreational and medicinal use of cannabis. It is still a federal crime to possess, buy, or sell cannabis. It is still a federal crime to possess, buy, or sell cannabis. Marijuana. California legalized recreational cannabis for adults in 2016, and the industry is overseen by the Department of Cannabis Control. Data used by the researchers for this study include bank and credit union call data for the years 2015 to 2020. The analysis showed that assets held by financial institutions in the counties that legalized marijuana had increased in that period by almost $750 million. The loan activity rose by about $500 million. Though these benefits are presumed to be spillover effects of better overall economic health that followed cannabis legalization in specific counties, Chudlowski said, but the interviews with the financial institutions indicated there has been little appetite among banks to associate with the marijuana industry. She quotes, it's important to remember when talking about loans that it's not possible to identify they were for cannabis operations, and they're probably not based on what we heard from stakeholders. It's more of a general relationship. The bank is doing better, and they're able to lend out more in general and earn more interest from loans. When they narrowed the analysis to banks that operate only in California, the researchers found that for each single new manufacturing or retail license, bank assets and loan capacity grew by tens of thousands of dollars. Cannabis cultivation licenses, on the other hand, had no impact on California banks' holdings. This suggests that a lot of the economic benefits of legalization come from other stages on the supply chain, and it's not a foregone conclusion that farmers benefit from legalization. There's a need to think about how farmers who are producing cannabis in the legal market, often operating in rural environments with a weaker economic base to start with, can be supported in the context of economic development. The team also interviewed marijuana farmers and representatives from banks and credit unions in Humboldt, Trinity, and Mendocino counties, the Emerald Triangle region known historically in California and nationally for the quantity and quality of the marijuana produced there. Of the banks and credit unions contacted by the researchers, most were not knowingly involved in the cannabis industry. Bankers reported being hamstrung by ambiguous federal guidelines, those that pose a real risk to financial cannabis, largely because banks are required to report suspicious transactions to the federal government. They might be seen as players in a criminal enterprise, even by providing banking services to employees who work for licensed members of the cannabis industry, or they could lose big on lending if cannabis-related assets backing a loan were seized by federal agents. Plekias quotes, "What's consistent across all financial institutions is that it's very costly and does involve on some risk to be in compliance with all the guidelines, the risk being that even if you follow all guidelines to the letter, there's no assurance that you can't still get in trouble." Cannabis growers they interviewed reported paying fees ranging from $200 to $3,000 per month for bank accounts, which they found to be cost prohibitive. These limitations leave most licensed marijuana producers and retailers in the lurch, forcing them to rely on non-traditional financing arrangements, maybe investing in friends' endeavors, or risk running cash operations. Jodlowski quotes, "There is a lot of evidence that cash can be better for a local economy because cash tends to stay local, but we are now a credit-based economy. In this day and age, it's incredibly harmful for local economic development to have an entire sector that's denied access to credit because much of the developing as a household or individual or industry requires credit and requires demonstration of credit worthiness." Quote, "That's a fundamental harm, sorts of restrictions." This research is part of a larger project on cannabis and community economic development in California, supported by a grant from the UC Davis Cannabis and Hemp Research Center. As part of this project, the California authors on this paper recently published a review of the opportunities and challenges marijuana legalization poses for localities in which the crop is cultivated and sold. Taylor quotes, "It's clear we need policies making cannabis baking and finance more equitable. It's also clear that ma and pa enterprises need to associate together in formal organizations so that they can achieve economies of scale and harness their political power to endure the transition to legal. Despite the stigma attached to marijuana, even when legal, its status as California's most valuable crop, estimated to be worth more than almonds and dairy combined, attracts outsiders who are better equipped to come up with funding to get their operations started and compete with legacy growers who have lived and worked in California for generations. This trend necessitates development of evidence-based policies that take all participants into consideration, the Ohio State researchers say. And Jedlowski quotes, "Our findings speak to confusion around existing policies and the need for streamlining, clarifying, and having a more unified approach to regulating this industry." Oh man, schools are fun. I like it. They can do all sorts of research projects. They got the time. I love it, love it. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, we've got from Asia.Nikkei.com, Thailand takes step towards decriminalizing marijuana. Looser rules could help key tourism sector rebuild after pandemic. Written by Masayuki Yuda. Bangkok. Thailand took another step towards decriminalizing marijuana on Thursday, kicking off a key government meeting that is expected to help pave the way to scrapping jail terms and fines for possessing the drug or growing it at home. With this move, the kingdom hopes to promote its vital tourism industry, following countries such as Uruguay and Canada, where attitudes towards marijuana use are relaxed and possession of the drug is legal. The meeting of the Public Health Ministry's Narcotic Drugs Control Committee, which is charged by the ministry's permanent secretary, is set to give its go-ahead and removing the plant from the country's narcotic list. The proposal must then be forwarded for final approval from the Narcotics Control Board, headed by Wisanu Kriyanyam, one of the six incumbent deputy prime ministers. People in Thailand convicted of producing, exporting, or importing cannabis currently face 2 to 15 years in prison and face fines up to 1.5 million baht, that's 45,000 American, while those caught in possession risk up to 5 years in jail and maximum fine of 100,000 baht. Some probably like almost 1,000. Those punishments will be scraped when the plant is delisted. Thailand has allowed medicinal use of marijuana since 2018, but has kept strict controls on growing, harvesting, and processing plants, parts with low psychoactive components, such as leaves and stems, were cut from the list in December 2020. The latest move will decriminalize flowers and buds, which are rich in psychoactive ingredients called tetrahydrocannabinol. Another deputy prime minister, Nutin Charnvirakul, who is also the public health minister, has been a strong supporter of legalizing cannabis as the leader of Bhojan Thai, a political party in the ruling coalition. He pledged during the 2019 general election that his party would push to legalize cannabis and allow households to grow up to 6 plants. That promise helped the party secure 51 seats in the election, making it a core member of the ruling coalition. As the next general elections approach, Anutin has been pressing to keep to his pledge. The push to scrub cannabis from the country's narcotics list comes in the wake of the removal of kratom, a plant native to Southeast Asia whose leaves are used as a mild stimulant and painkiller. Looser marijuana rules could help attract more visitors to the country as its key tourism sector fights to get back on track following the coronavirus pandemic. But critics warn of dangers such as people driving under the influence of drugs. Highly addictive drugs such as heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine remain illegal in Thailand with heavy punishments. Next, from Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from en.mercopress.com, cannabis developers eye Paraguay to further expand their business. Beautiful. Hello. Thank you. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, and all the fun technicalness that goes on with putting together one of these little podcasts. Paraguay's inexpensive utilities, in addition to the country's comparable low wages, coupled with an already established pharmaceutical industry, make it suitable to compete with marijuana-friendly countries such as Colombia and Uruguay. According to Perfil, medical cannabis exporter C-Plant Switzerland expects to buy over a licensed producer in Paraguay in early 2022 to grow high THC flowers and derivatives for the company's Swiss laboratory, CEO Lucas Cervioli said. If the cannabis price continues to fall, CP Plant could move most of its cultivation from Uruguay to Paraguay, where operating costs are 50% lower. In Paraguay, medical cannabis is legal since 2017. Quoted, "We would go to Paraguay if the regulation accompanies us and the market prices allow us to have a substantially higher profit margin in Paraguay than Uruguay. We will aim to grow crops in Paraguay," Srivillone told Perfil in a telephone interview. Cannabis exporters are facing several years of falling prices as growing volumes of low-cost production from Mediterranean and Southern Hemisphere countries hit the market. Production of marijuana for medical purposes is currently limited in Paraguay to 12 local investors who obtained licenses in 2020. Three of those companies are already supplying CBD oil and capsules to pharmacies and to the Paraguayan Health Ministry, Perfil explained. CP Plant plans to start growing both in Uruguay, Paraguay, the flower with high content of THC, the pricey psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. The company already produces cannabis for CBD in Uruguay, a substance that is advertised as high in therapeutic effects. CP plant could grow up to 5 hectares of the high THC flower in Paraguay by 2024, Servilion said. The switch to THC occurs when the prices of CBD products drop. CBD flower prices went down 20% in 2021 from the previous year, explained Servilion, who expects the produce 15 to 25 tons of flower in Uruguay this year, up from 9 tons in 2021. Sales will more than double to US 8 million due to the new products and increased production. Since 2019, Uruguay has shipped more than 32 metric tons of flower, biomass, seeds, and medical products to countries such as Switzerland, Germany, and Portugal. CP plant obtains all its cannabis from 44 hectares cultivated by associate growers. The company provides seeds, licenses, and technical assistance. Okay, you guys are great. I really appreciate you tonight. Leave you guys with a little I need a Sunday song now. On a Sunday, getting down on a Sunday. Well, I'll leave you guys with Tanel. Have a beautiful, beautiful night. Thank you so much for listening. Smoke News Radio, love you very much. All you that get a chance to listen, I really appreciate it. Spread the good leaf.
You know I love you, the way you hit my chest like a boom boom beat. You light up the room with your sweet taste. No one can take your place, how you smell so good. Don't misunderstand, but I know one day my papa will see the love we share so effortlessly. Yes, I need you to get me through the night. Wrap your stuff around my heart and make it so right. It's alright. Oh.